This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Margaret Turner,
Dane Bolton,
John Ward,
and I'm Stuart Burks. So after the Second World War, there was a major change in the nature of art galleries and exhibitions.
Oh yes, complete change.
And you were involved?
And wonderful. Yes. And I was terribly lucky. I was in at the beginning. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because I suppose... No.
It's good. Keep going.
I'd been terribly lucky because I'd been a student at a place in Wiltshire called Bath Academy. Yeah.
Which was Bauhaus-type recording.
Which was...
Bauhaus. Bauhaus, yes.
Yes. Mm. And so... And also, I'd been looking after the collection, which was in Corsham Court, which was from the early 1300s. The collection in the house itself.
Yeah. So what would be in that?
Sorry?
What would be in that from the early 1300s?
Yes. But, yeah. Yes. Well, the Bath Academy itself, I can show you photographs later.
Yeah.
But that belonged to a person called Lord Methuen, who was a painter himself. Mm. And so the collection was superb. But it meant that as a student, you had both these things happening for you. You had the artists who had been in the war and had come out, as it were, and were now liberated from what had gone before. So you had people like William Scott and all these marvellous people who came in as staff to Bath Academy. And so you have the beginning of the change there in teaching the art students before they even went into their careers. So it was, the war was this extraordinary change in the arts. Because many of those painters who were in the war came back liberated, as it were, and strong enough, and most of them had to teach to begin with. So there are two or three art schools in England that benefited enormously from this, and Bath was one of them, because it had been bombed in the war, and so it was out in the country where we were.
So why did the war liberate them? You mean the conventions
I think that, in a funny way. Mm. And also, they came back also very adult. You know, they weren't just going straight into school. They'd had this war experience, as it were, and they were coming back.
So these were people who'd served overseas rather than people who just lived through it.
Indeed. Indeed. And you have really major, major, major artists coming back after that time. And I suppose they were liberated.
Different views completely.
Yes.
What they would have had originally.
Indeed.
So when was Henry Moore? He was Henry Moore?
Yes, yes. He was Yorkshire.
Oh, right. Oh.
Yes, yes. Well, he was certainly one of them.
He was one of them.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah,
yes.
Amazing guy. Mm. Incredible.
No, it was an amazing time.
Mm. Now, let's see. So we've discussed about your time in Canberra, but you came to the Manawatu.
Yes.
Is that a big jump? That's a big jump.
It's a very big jump, yes.
But when you brought your exhibitions out to New Zealand.
Yes, what was fatal? I met David, my husband.
Mm-hmm.
whom I married, you see, which was rather fatal, really.
And you...
That wasn't.
So you met him in Palmerston North.
So
what did he have to do with your exhibitions?
No, well, what happened? He and darling Lute Bieringer. Did you know Lute?
Before your time, no, I think.
No. Lute was director of the art gallery here in the 70s, when I first brought the exhibition from Canberra. And by the time I got to, town here, I was exhausted because I'd already done three exhibitions in the South Island and giving lectures the whole time, and I was just kaput. So Lute just put me to bed. and then he and David Taylor, who they were planning to build a new gallery here. So they were very anxious to know what was happening in Canberra, because we were building the gallery in Canberra. And so I invited them to come over and stay with me in Canberra, and they could meet the architects, you see. And there were 12 architects in Canberra that we had got to know terribly well, who were wonderful people. And I knew that they'd be perfectly happy about this happening. So David and Lute came over to Canberra to meet the architects. And that was the beginning of our fatal...
attraction.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was brilliant. So how long before you came out to live here?
So we built this. We got married in 75.
In Australia or here?
In Australia, in Tasmania.
Of course, yes, yeah.
Where my mother was living at the time. But then within a week I was back in Canberra because I was needed, you know, they couldn't let me go. So we had a week's married life, and then until the Christmas, I think. And then I came back to at least I came here, and we built this place. And then, before it was finished, I was back in Canberra again. And for the next 6 years, I was back and forth.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Because we were building Canberra.
So it was a long-distance marriage.
It was.
So he was working here.
But you see, he was working here. Yeah.
Building his...
But you see, doing other architectural things.
Yeah.
But also, he loved coming to Canberra.
So he was an architect?
He was an architect,
okay.
David.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So he came to Canberra at any excuse.
Of course.
So he was backwards and forwards
now,
like a yo-yo.
So in those days, was the travel expensive? Were phone calls expensive?
I don't know about David. No, it wouldn't be for him. But for me, obviously, I was still employed.
Yes.
I was still there, yes.
Okay, yes. Hmm.
So I was there until 82, until it was opened by the Queen. So I was presented to the Queen.
Yes. Amazing. And then after, did you come out here permanently? Did you come back to Palmerston North permanently after the exhibition, after the gallery was opened?
Yes, I did.
You came back here.
And that was the year that Lute went to... Wellington to the National Gallery.
Mm. Mm. And you took over here?
And I took over there.
Oh,
yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah. So where was David building this first gallery? Whereabouts in Palmerston North was that? It's not the one...
Oh, it's the one that's there now.
Oh, that's that... Oh, right.
That's the one that was drawn in Canberra in my house.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise that.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. I know. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Mm. Well, how long were you doing that? And when did the weaving of all the beautiful
materials... Oh, that was quite a lot. Well, not terribly long after, I suppose. I was there until I suppose 88. Mm. But we began the weaving, I think, fairly soon after we got here, because the I had a rather passion for black sheep. Mm. And so and so we had black sheep running around here. And I thought that, you know, it made rather beautiful tweed.
It did.
So that was the beginning of the tweed thing happening.
It's extraordinary. So was David still working as an architect mm-hmm. at that stage?
Yes. Well,
but didn't he start the spinning, the weaving?
Well, we did the designing. I did the designing of it. Then it was woven in town by Martin Townsend.
Oh, right.
Mm. And Martin was a lovely person. Mm-hmm. Did you ever meet him?
No, I didn't.
Oh, gorgeous.
Was that as a hobby or as a...
Oh, no, he had a mill in town.
Oh, okay.
But he was fascinated by our ideas of... I can show you some of the tweed. It really was rather gorgeous.
Now, if you're designing something to be woven, are there constraints in your design on that basis, or you can just do any pattern you want can be woven?
Well, I think this we were dependent a lot upon Martin, because he had been. I think he'd been taught in, or his father was part of it as well, and his father had been brought up in Yorkshire. So, and I suppose my early sort of, not introduction to weaving exactly, but my family had estates in Yorkshire which had sheep on them, and so wool was around the family, as it were. But it was an incredible introduction to
the actual thing. You had the black sheep, so you had them ashore. And
yes,
ashore,
I must find you. I'll find you a sample.
You spun and dyed it and so on? Yeah. Mm. So you dyed it yourself?
Oh, you don't dye it, you see.
No,
that's
you just
the joy.
The natural colour. Okay.
Because what you could do, and this is where my art came in a way, you could have the variation, you know, they all have variations, mm-hmm. black sheep. They have bits mm-hmm. which are lighter and yeah. patches and all of that. So you can have it from really black mm-hmm. to dark grey to light grey to white. So you have four colours, which is like a work on paper. It's like mm-hmm. a drawing. So for me, that was easy as peasy. But nobody had done it in New Zealand before.
Okay. Yeah. Had you seen it in England?
Hmm?
Had you seen it in England?
No, not so much. Okay. Not so much, no.
So
it was quite new in a way.
So what
there were people like this thing on the wall here, which is of linen, by somebody called Illingworth, who's a famous weaver in England. But that's just using linen, do you see? But it had the same feeling for drawing as I had in wool. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So that inspired me.
It's beautiful. So what breed of sheep did you breed your own sheep?
No, we had people
would give you.
You see, they used to throw out their black sheep.
Yeah, bad.
And I couldn't bear the fact that these sheep were being... So we took all the orphans we could find.
God, yeah, yeah.
Jeez, and the orphans became the perfect sheep.
So were they mainly Romneys?
They were mixtures.
Everything.
You can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Yes,
everything.
Everywhere.
Okay, there's a few piebald ones out there.
Yes.
And did you breed your own then?
Sorry?
Did you breed your own?
Well, they bred themselves, yes.
Yes. So if you've got sheep with coloured wool, then their offspring would also...
Indeed.
Yes.
Okay.
So
yes.
It doesn't revert to white.
So we used to have about 60 odd, I suppose, which gives us quite a lot of wool.
Yes.
But that's how that started, which is extraordinary, really. Mm.
And you sold your...
Oh, yes. It had an incredible success, actually. On the first lot of weaving that we made, I was going backwards to Canberra. Because it happened during the time I was still going backwards and forwards. And I took some samples with me to show all my art gallery people, you see.
This was the finished article, the finished...
Yes, we got
article,
my dear Matthew at the gallery, the mill, had done me samples, you see. So I took these with me proudly to show what was happening, you see. And they said, that was when they told me that Hardy Amis was visiting Melbourne at that time. Go and show him, Margaret. You know, this was at a very drink party. And I said, yes, you know. So on my way to Canberra, you know, I stopped and I left a whole lot of this at the hotel he was staying in Melbourne.
Now, you mentioned Hardy Amis.
Hardy Amis, yes. Okay. So I left it there for him to see.
Now, why is he a significant name?
Well, he's a major tailor. Okay. He's a sort of fashion man who made things for the Queen.
London.
In London. Okay. Yes, and he was visiting Australia. Okay. So I went back down to Tasmania because I was going to have a weekend with Mummy before going to Canberra. And that was when she came and said, Margaret, this Hardy Amis on the phone.
So famous.
I was in bed still at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know. So I got up and he said, my dear girl, you didn't tell me the half, did you? I love it. My staff loves it. We want it.
I didn't realise it. Well, that's quite something, isn't it? That's
unbelievable.
Amazing.
So he ordered from it. Yes.
The Queen's worn your...
Oh, yes. It's gone to London. Yeah.
That's
staggering.
Amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So we couldn't believe it, actually.
You're as good as my auntie in my name with being the milliner to the Queen.
Ah. Yeah. Yes.
So did he give you orders for completed garden material, or did he use your wool to...
Oh, no, he ordered it. He ordered the material.
Finished product.
The made.
The finished
product. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It's incredible.
Yes.
And did he pay a good price?
He did. My golly. Yes.
So you're an exporter.
It was just extraordinary. I mean, we couldn't believe it.
So, and did you then have enough wool to meet those sorts of orders, or were you having to...
Well, we had to get in wool, you know. We brought in a lot from the South Island because it was, you know, better quality and what have you.
Were they merinos for the very fine, fine wool?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It was like, I must show you some samples.
I didn't realise the merinos had black sheep as well. I just assumed they were all white. Mm. White wool. I didn't realise they had coloured wool in the merinos.
Oh, yes. Yes. Mm. Yes.
I suppose they would. Yeah. Mm. Oh, amazing. I had no idea you were had a connection
I mean, the sheep were, poor black sheep were disposed of so fast, you can't imagine.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So we just absorbed all the rejects.
It's amazing.
Because I love black sheep. I mean, they look beautiful, I thought.
They do.
Yes. Yeah. They had character.
And also, if you have a ewe, white wool, then she has twins, and one white lamb and one black lamb.
It can be. Mm. It can be.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Most attractive.
Yeah. Extraordinary. Yeah.
Would you know what the traditional natural colour of sheep's wool would have been? Is it something that it's been bred to be white by sheep farmers, or before they were domesticated?
I'd never worked with wool before. You know, it was completely new. But it was like paper, you know. I mean, for me, it was the same sort of thing that had to be thought of what you do with this marvelous stuff.
Yes.
And it was, to me, it was much more exciting than just white wool.
But you have brown sheep, you have grey sheep.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Oh, you do.
Beautiful colours. Beautiful. Honey coloured. Beautiful.
Yes. It's quite extraordinary,
quite
isn't it?
Exciting. Yeah. I had no idea that I knew that David had been involved in producing weaving woolen garments, woolen material, but I didn't realise that it had gone so far, the Hurdy Amys. And
No. It was staggering.
Yeah.
And it was sold. It was sold very much in Italy, too. They loved it.
For very fine making suits and...
I think it also appealed to arty people, you know, because of the...
It's a natural fibre.
This must have been very limited, top-end and very, of the market, because you simply couldn't do it in bulk.
There were very few like it.
Yeah.
And it was real. It hadn't had dye anywhere in it.
So is this still ongoing with other people doing that, or was it just a phase in the market?
I think it's faded out now, yes. It was. It demanded being, as it were, pure, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was fine from my point of view, because I wouldn't have had it any other way, but I think it probably needed more arty people, perhaps, to be... to be mad enough to do it.
Yes.
To that extent, that extreme. Yeah. But her spinning, I mean, I spin.
Yes.
That's homespun wool, and I don't dye it.
Yes.
That's become quite a hobby.
Oh, yes.
A few people now wanting to learn to spin.
Yes.
And as somebody said, anyone who's anyone has a homespun jersey.
Yes. Yes. Mm. And they are ravishing, aren't they?
Oh, they're beautiful.
The variation in texture is...
And the colours.
Yes. Superb. Colours.
Gosh, I am most impressed. I had no idea.
It was a terribly funny time, really.
Yeah. Did you try other materials such as flax then?
No.
So you've worked with wool, and in your own artwork then, did you do much?
Well, I don't, see. I think once you begin working in galleries, you must never do your own work, really. Because... it makes you biased. It means that there is a bias.
Okay.
And so therefore...
That's like lawyers saying they never have an opinion on something because they don't know which side they'll have to argue.
Yes. But it's very true.
It's fence-sitting.
It is an extraordinary reality.
So you now go to art in Ashurst once a week?
Oh, yes. Now, this is amazing. This is the first time... that I've been doing this since I've left the art gallery, that I've done my own work.
Good.
Do you see?
Yes, yeah.
And I think, because after all, when you're working in a gallery or working on exhibitions, you have an enormous amount of stuff to do.
Yes.
But you've got to keep an open mind, and it's never any use if you have a thinking about your own. It's not on.
So when you go to your art things on Friday mornings,
yes,
what do you actually painting? You're producing?
I'm usually doing collage.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yes, which again is slightly different. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Because it's not necessarily all your own work. It's your own putting together. And I mean, I always adored drawing. I loved it. But it's amazing how I have absolutely subdued that. But, I mean, I could go and do it now.
Yeah.
Without any worries.
So you find it stimulating?
Oh, enormously.
Yeah.
And collage I find very interesting.
Once you get back into doing it again, does your imagination find
Oh, yes. But I think... I think it's quite right to not be in charge of a collection if you are involved in one of the disciplines, because then you would have a bias for the collection, and you cannot afford to have that. You have to be able to see everyone in its perspective. But that's not difficult. It's when you're handling a whole lot of material, it's just delicious.
So you were working with the gallery in town, and you left that, was it about 88, you said,
Yes, I worked in the gallery until 88. And then I, because at that time, David and I also wanted to go on a trip to England. And so I thought this was really a very good time to stop. So we had a 6 months marvellous time in England, because I really terribly wanted to show David a lot of the things that, you know, were important to me in England. And so we actually had two trips within the next 3 years to England, both 6 months, and both travelling with a sort of, you know, the motor home on your back sort of thing. So they were wonderful. They were absolutely amazing times. But David began being ill, really, he really became not well at all, and for 10 years... for the first, I suppose, almost 4 years of that, he remained here in the house and I looked after him. But then it just became too much, it was too difficult. So then he had 6 years away. But there again, I was still with him every day for half the day.
So and what was it that he had?
He just, I suppose it's, this awful dementia, you know.
Okay. Yes.
Which can be really, which can be just so desperately sad.
Very difficult.
Yeah. Very hard for very both for the carer and the patient.
And I suppose he was 10 years older than I, and that was.
He hadn't actually stopped, he was still
really
into doing things.
Yes. Yes. So it was very sad.
Well, he might have had a mini stroke or something.
10 years is a long time for you to be involved in caring for him.
Yes, well, it was. It meant certainly that I could. I did occasional workshops around the country because I've always been teaching the staff in these institutions. So
the art therapy type.
So and the university.
So you know Gillian Hunt, do you?
Sorry,
Gillian Hunt.
Yes. But I used to go up to Auckland quite often. And so I taught people in the university, and most of these places have collections of their own to look after too. So very often they have curators in them, but they all need skill in handling and displaying and what have you. So I became the sort of granny of art collections. But that was lovely because it meant that they still come here and stay.
Yeah. I was going to say, so in what period was this?
So this would have been, well, certainly from the time when I married David and was here.
Yeah.
Until a few years ago.
Okay. So when did David die?
David died in 2006.
Okay. So yes. there was starting to be more recognition of dementia by then.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. But no, it's always lovely when you get a whole lot of people together who love what they're working with.
Yes.
The sort of appetite is never ending. Yeah. And they've always got problems, yes. You know, so yeah. Solving problems is really quite exciting too. Yeah.
I don't know if accountants get that pleasure, do they?
Perhaps you did a job you didn't enjoy.
Yeah, I think some accountants can enjoy the work, but it's a different sort of pleasure.
Yes,
oh,
yes, yes, I know. Yeah. I'm there.
Gosh, what an exciting life, really.
It was gorgeous. Mm. I regret terribly the fact that the art gallery is lost in the in town. You know, it's been taken over by the museum. And I despair of that. I find it very hard indeed. Because they don't... there they are with a staff of about 40, and they only have 6 exhibitions a year. That to me is wicked.
It's waste, awful waste.
You mean the art gallery has a staff of 40 or the museum and science center?
No, it's one thing.
Yes, so all
it's called the museum.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And so, but they've taken over the art gallery, you see.
Yes.
Very naughty. And I think, now I despair, really, because now the artists in town have nowhere to go or to find.
They go to Square Edge or where? Pathetic. Where do they go?
Yes,
where
there is something Square Edge for.
Well, they can use Square Edge certainly, but they should be having exhibitions of them.
Yes, and then Stu Schwartz had his.
And also exhibitions to show them new things all the time.
Yeah,
I find it terrible. Why? Actually,
so can I ask you? You're at what age now?
I'm 85.
85. And now you're getting more active in art yourself, doing more of your own art?
Well, I suppose so, because of Darling Sue. So it means that she has these classes on Friday. Sue Artner. Yes.
Because she used to teach art in one of the schools in Palmerston North.
Yes, she did. Yes. Okay. Yes. Oh, she's marvellous, is Sue. So, we are great friends.
So now it's a lot of retired people getting together and having great fun doing art.
I know.
Yes, excellent.
Yes.
It's lovely. The cars are all lined all along the side of the street. I often go past.
It's gorgeous, actually.
Yeah. And how much is doing art and how much is it nattering?
Oh, I think we all work fairly hard, actually, at it.
Yeah.
But it is a most lovely atmosphere.
Yes.
It just couldn't be better.
And this is Darling Sue is one of the type community, is it?
Well, also they are come out from town as well.
Okay, from Palmerston.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Very so good. She has two after Thursday and a Friday.
Thursday and Friday.
Okay. Yeah, how many people?
So she has altogether. She must have 30 odd, at least 30 to 40 people.
Men, women, a mix.
Mixed. Yeah.
And are many of those people who have always been artists, or are some just taking it up in retirement?
Well, I think some have taken it up in retirement, but quite a lot of them have done, you know, quite a lot before.
Okay.
But, it's the happiest, the happiest group of people you could ever imagine. And Sue is one of my trustees. So... She keeps a very, you know, a weather eye on me for becoming stupid. And
do you have exhibitions of the work you do there?
Yes, I think there was one last year. Yes.
Oh, right. In Ashurst or where?
Yes, in Ashurst. Oh, right, in that. We work in the is it the Methodist?
Yes,
hall?
Yes. It is. Yes.
Yes. Yes, it goes up in there.
Oh, gosh. So when are you having your next one?
I don't know. Ooh. I don't know.
I think you need to have one. I'm going to go and have a look.
It probably is before Christmas, I think. It probably is. Yes.
Oh,
but Sue is a most marvellous teacher.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programmes can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website,
and a range of programmes is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.